Welcome back to the Hemingway List. It's the podcast where we do things. We're doing things about part 7, chapter 4 of Anna Karenina. Lvov and Levin are suddenly very close. Cool. I don't even know if I'm saying Lvov's name right, but Lvov. Charolette said, Natali says, when we were brought up, they went to one extreme and kept us children in the attics while our parents lived on the first floor, but now it's just the reverse. The lumber room for the parents and the first floor for the children. Nowadays, parents are hardly allowed to live and everything is for the children. I love the combination of outdated metaphor and timeless topic, where the parents these days spend too much or too little effort on their kids is still quite debated. Where I live, in the US, we are too far in the second direction, in my opinion. Everyone talks about what is best for the kids without asking what kind of impact it will have on the parents. One example is breastfeeding. There is lots of discussion of the benefits it has for a baby. And the best research shows the benefits have been severely overstated. But no one talks about the impact it has on the nursing parent to wake up and feed the baby or pump every 2 or 3 hours with no chance to sleep and let someone else take care of the baby for a little while. I'm not sure if the pendulum has swung too far in the opposite direction. At least here people seem very ready to absolve parents of doing that which is hard or inconvenient. Personally, I think children require self-sacrifice. At least if you want to be a good parent, you create a new life and the weight of that responsibility is immense. At least in those early years where your feeding and habits might have significant long-term effects. I Am Norwegian also said, I love Levin meets new person chapters. I hope we get to spend more time with Lvov. He seems like such a genuine guy. Star415 said, Natalia and Lvov seem like interesting characters. I wish they were introduced earlier. The parenting timeless complaint is like the when I was your age, I walked 6 miles in the snow to school. Each generation feels cheated out of their me time. And their kids' generation is a spoiled one. As for Levin's day, for someone not keen on meeting people, he is having a long day of it, and it is still going. So, are they going to do the intervention with Stepan? I feel he will be able to turn it around and convince them of the necessity of his ways. That's it. That's it. That's all the conversation for today. Cool, 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 cool. Short and sweet, hey? And it's a short and sweet chapter 2. Chapter 5. So let's continue on and see what happens. Chapter 5. At the matinee concert, there were 2 very interesting items. One was King Lear on the Heath, a fantasia, and the other was a quartet dedicated to the memory of Bach. Both pieces were new and in the new style, and Levin wished to form an opinion on them. When he had conducted his sister-in-law to her seat, he took his station behind a pillar, resolved to listen as attentively and as conscientiously as possible. He tried not to let his mind wander, nor to let his impression of the music be marred by looking at the white-tied conductor's arm waving, which always so unpleasantly distracts one's attention from the music, nor by the ladies with their bonnets, the ribbons of which were so carefully tied over their ears for the concert, nor by all those other persons who were either not interested in anything or were interested in all sorts of things other than music. He carefully avoided the musical experts and great talkers and stood with lowered eyes, gazing straight before him, listening. But the longer he listened to the King Lear fantasia, the further he felt from the possibility of forming any definite opinion. The musical expression of some emotion seemed perpetually on the point of beginning, when it suddenly broke into fragments of the expression of other emotions, or even into unrelated sounds which, elaborate though they were only connected by the whim of the composer. Even those fragments of musical expression, though some of them were good, were unpleasing because they were quite unexpected and unprepared for. Mirth, sadness, despair, tenderness, triumph came forth without any cause, like the thoughts of a madman. And in the mind of a madman, these emotions vanished just as unexpectedly. Throughout the performance, Levin felt like a deaf person watching a dance. He was quite perplexed when the music stopped and felt very tired as a result of strained attention, quite unrewarded. From all sides came loud applause. Everyone rose, began to walk about and to talk. Wishing to clear up his own perplexity by hearing other people's impressions, Levin went to look for the experts and was pleased to find a celebrated one chatting with his own acquaintance, Pestsov. Wonderful, Pestsov was saying in his deep bass. How do you do, Konstantin Dmitrich? Especially shapely, plastic, and rich in colour, if one may say so, in the passage where you feel the approach of Cordelia, the woman, das Uwij Wiblich, the eternal feminine. And she enters upon a struggle with fate. Why, what has Cordelia to do with it? Levin asked timidly, having quite forgotten that the Fantasia presented King Lear on the heath. Cordelia appears here, said Pestsov, tapping with his fingers the glossy program he was holding and handing it to Levin. Only then did Levin recollect the title of the Fantasia and hasten to read the Russian translation of a passage from Shakespeare which was printed on the back. You can't follow without it, said Pestsov, turning to Levin as the man he had been talking to had gone away and had no one else to talk to. During the interval, Levin and Pestsov began a discussion on the merits and defects of the Wagnerian tendency in music. Levin maintained that the mistake of Wagner and of all his followers lay in trying to make music enter the domain of another art, and that poetry commits the same error when it depicts the features of a face, which should be done by a painting. And as an example of this kind of error, he mentioned a sculptor who tried to chisel the shadows of poetic images arising around the pedestal of his statue of a poet. The sculptor's shadows so little resembled shadows that they even clung to a ladder, said Levin. He liked this phrase, but could not remember whether he had not used it before, and to Pestsov himself, and after saying it he grew embarrassed. Pestsov argued that art was all one and that it can only reach its highest manifestations by uniting all the different kinds of art. Levin could not listen to the second part of the concert, for Pestsov, who stood beside him, talked all the while and found fault with the piece because of its unnecessary and sickly affectation of simplicity, comparing it with the simplicities of the pre-Raphaelite school of painting. On going out, Levin met several other acquaintances with whom he talked about politics, music, and mutual friends. Among others, he met Count Boll. He had quite forgotten his intended visit to him. Well then, go at once, said the Princess Lvova, to whom he mentioned the matter. Perhaps they won't receive you, and then call for me at the meeting. You have time enough. All right, there we go, another chapter down. Interesting. Bit of a ball one. A ball? No, what's it called? Concert? That's the word. Bit self-aware, that chapter. A little bit meta, I thought. In that Tolstoy spends quite a lot of the chapter describing music and then goes on to describe how you shouldn't try to cross arts, like a poet describing a face. A sculptor should do that. I think he's also trying to say a writer shouldn't describe music. Musicians should just play it. Right? Does that seem kind of the point he was making? It was like he did it. He described music using words and then realized there's no point describing music with words. Like, it just doesn't compare to actually having the music. And then, in true Tolstoy fashion, when he's got a thought in his head, he just makes the characters have a conversation. And it just felt a bit like a cop-out because he's just been self-aware of the mistake he's made. So he's like, aha, I'll confess to it through conversation. So you can't call him up on it. But I'm still calling him up on it. And I'm calling him up on his defense against being called up on it. That's what I'm doing. Still, interesting chapter. Have your say over at the subreddit. Thanks very much for listening, and I will see you tomorrow.